back together again, you and I, in a midweek Wednesday edition, January 26th, 2022, of Connecticut Today. We chatted with former George W. Bush White House official Gene Card on the continued Republican allegiance to former President Donald Trump and a possible rift developing regarding that in the Senate. Retired Connecticut Superior Court judge and current Quinnipiac University Law School professor Angela Robinson called in to talk about the announced retirement of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer. We welcome to Connecticut today for another look at what's going on in D.C., particularly with the Republican Party, former Bush, George W. Bush administration official. She's a communications strategist who served in the Departments of Justice and the Treasury, among other things, in D.C. Gene Carr joins us. Hey, Gene, it's Paul here at WICC in Connecticut. How are you?
Great, Paul. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Well, I tell you, Gene, you probably saw that poll that came out yesterday. It was in The Hill and some other publications, a Harvard-Harris poll with, eight possible 2024 folks in a presidential primary, and Donald Trump still gets 57%. And I know you saw earlier, you sent out a link to a story about the two big personalities there on the Republican side of the aisle, Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, maybe having a disagreement about, an allegiance to Trump. Boy, it's certainly interesting now in D.C. with the Republicans, is it not?
It is. I mean, it's interesting on both sides, I think. And Trump is still at the center of the party, of the Republican Party. I mean, is he going to end up at the top or the bottom? I don't know. But he's certainly the focus of attention. And that keeps going. And it is fed by his legitimate popularity. And it's also fed by the fact that he is a media figure. And whenever something comes up about him or he says something, it does still get covered. So even though he's a former president, usually former presidents fade away, but he's a very different character. And as a Republican myself, I'm concerned. I don't know how long we go along this way. I still think there's an opportunity for another individual or two to take him on. I do think that's possible.
I find it interesting, Gene, and it's funny you mention that, because before we connected a few minutes ago, that's exactly what I led into this segment was with. That, former presidents, traditionally, they kind of laid low. They worked on their library, and they came out 2 years later during the midterms to do a little campaigning, and then, maybe some campaigning 4 years later for the next nominee. And that is simply not how Donald Trump works. And I say that to you looking at my my show email here, where I've gotten at least 7 or 8 emails from the former president's office today looking for money. Looking for money, Gene. So he's certainly blowing up convention, isn't he?
Oh, no question. And he has from the beginning. And that's a lot of what made him so popular and what makes him fascinating to people and refreshing to people. We were ready, I think, not just the Republican Party, but probably a lot of Americans, we were ready for something different. It did feel like the same old, same old. And people in Washington were very separate from the people living and working in the rest of the country. And there was this disconnect, and it built up and built up, and Donald Trump seemed like the answer. Now, not everybody agrees on that. I consider myself to be a populist Republican, and Trump is not my cup of tea. But it's no wonder that he was and remains refreshing. But the political class doesn't know what to do with it. No one has any idea. I do say we, because I suppose I am part of it, right? Because just by virtue of having lived and worked in Washington for nearly 30 years. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing we can do about it. That's the good news, right? This will play itself out all over the country. The 22 midterm elections will inform what happens with the party. And then we've got a couple more years before presidential. It will get worked out. Not in Washington, but across the country.
Good point. Gene, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Got a break here for traffic and weather together. Gene Card is the guest. You heard she just said she served decades in D.C., back to the Bush 43 White House in various capacities, media strategist right now. More of this fascinating chat coming up. First, though, traffic and weather together right here. It's a midweek Wednesday on WICC. And the continued, the continued odyssey of Donald John Trump, who the Democrats are still going after. 57% of Republicans said the other day in a new poll, yeah, they want him to run for president again in 2024. We are discussing that with Gene Card, a conservative communication strategist who served in the Departments of Justice and Treasury in her role with the George W. Bush number 43 White House. Gene, this story that was sent along with your info is fascinating, and I missed it. Partly because I can only afford so many online subscriptions, and I can't get past the Washington Post, the paywall. You know, I thought I had that down to a science, Gene. Okay, let me try it on this computer because the cookie isn't there. Come on, face it. We've all done it. But it's an interesting story to be that public about a rift between Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell about Trump, is it not?
It is interesting. And, you know, but this is, these are different times that we live in every direction. I do think that, I'm waiting to see where the rest of the party will go now that there are these rifts. Okay, so Trump is anti-McConnell and has been for a little bit now. That was the first step, right? Lindsey Graham is really a Trump guy, but McConnell has now... McConnell and Trump are now officially separate. McConnell is a giant in the Republican Party. I mean, he is credited with winning and hanging on to the Senate, you know, for more than any other Republican leader in the Senate in modern times. I mean, he is very influential. And so this is something to be watched very carefully. People look, elected officials at the national level look to McConnell for the smart political strategy. They believe that the course that he charts will get Republicans to victory because he's done it so many times and something is changing. Is it that McConnell doesn't care about winning anymore? I doubt it.
Yeah.
That's what he's being criticized of. He's being criticized as someone who is, you know, not put out a winning strategy, but he's so smart and so strategic. This is one where I want to get out the popcorn and watch, because I think it's just interesting and unprecedented.
You know, the old NFL coach around here, Gene, for the New York Giants, Bill Parcells, used to say that never mind all the trappings and all the other distractions. You know, you are what your record says you are. That's one of his favorite phrases. You are what your record says you are. And sometimes over my career of doing shows like this and watching this, you know, I've looked at Mitch McConnell. I'm like, well, there's not a whole lot there. And he's kind of gives this country bumpkin persona. But then, like you say, when you look at his leadership and how many people have counted this guy out and McConnell's done, and he's still there and he's getting the job done.
Talk about a different figure from Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
McConnell is so low-key behind the scenes and has built up all of this respect and I would even say awe over the years. I mean, people in Republican politics are in awe of McConnell. It's like when he doesn't say much, but when he does, everybody shuts up and listens because he has been so good at winning.
Absolutely.
And he's got a more winning record than Donald Trump, right? McConnell has won many times. Trump has only won once.
And, you know, the old, and you being a communication strategist and me being in this business, you've heard the old phrase, less is more. If you talk less, what you say has to carry heavier weight. You pick your words carefully. You speak quietly. You know, kind of back to the Daniel Moynihan thing. And, man, does McConnell have that down or what?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if he was born that way or if he figured out that how compelling it could be. I mean, I've worked with people like that in Washington, too, who sit through a very long meeting silent. And you think, don't they have a thought in their head? And then they speak. And it sound, either it is or it certainly sounds like the smartest thing that's been said in an hour. It's a brilliant move. And I legitimately think McConnell is brilliant. And by the way, a real conservative. Okay, so that's part of what's going on in the Republican Party is whether or not you are a conservative is considered by some to be whether or not you're pro-Trump. When someone says Mitch McConnell is not a conservative, as members of my own family now say, I have to say, you hang on 1 second. We are living in a very strange world. If Mitch McConnell, of course he's a conservative. Of course he is. Just like Liz Cheney is.
Sure.
You look at the voting records. These people are conservatives. They are philosophically grounded conservatives.
as Gene Card, as a pundit, as a communications specialist, what do you make of the Biden White House so far and all the aspects of this with how Joe Biden is conducting himself and the dynamic around Kamala Harris? And I know it's only been a year, but there have been staffing changes in her office, and, you know, who's running the country? Is it Joe Biden? Is it, you know, Ron Klain? What do you make of all this?
I have nothing but sadness. I mean, it's very easy, and most conservative pundits will tell you something, you know, they may be hyperbolic, or they might call names about the Biden White House and Biden himself. I have sadness because this is going so very badly, and that is bad for our country, and these are dangerous times that we live in. He is a weak president. He does not seem to have outstanding cognitive function that we really need a president to have. I think the drama with the vice president, with her staff drama usually reveals leadership weakness. Okay, that's how it works in Washington. When you have high turnover and that usually means that person is not good to work for, which means they're not a good leader. So we've got a weak guy at the top. We've got a poor leader in the number two spot. Ron Klain is on Twitter all day, the chief of staff. It makes me worried and it makes me sad. And, you know, I don't think he can be reelected. But this is why the question is so fascinating as to who ends up at the top of the Republican Party, because the opportunity, I mean, it's like the Democrats are giving us the slowest pitch of all slow pitches. And my party should be winding up to just smash it out of the park. But we can't decide whether we're going to stick with Trump.
Yeah, and I say this all the time, Gene. Finally, I say this all the time. You know, you can't read into, I think, approval ratings or what the pundit says, because, Gene, just because people are not approving of somebody on either side, Democrat or Republican, that doesn't necessarily mean they like the alternative. It's kind of when you're at work, it's like, well, you know, you're going to assign me him on that project. Well, it could be him or her. Oh, I don't want her. No, I'd rather stay with him, right? Am I reading this wrong or right? I mean, seriously.
You're right. Well, and in fact, you make me think it through. Like, if 24 was... strangely, Biden versus Trump again, I suppose Biden still could win, because people really, really don't like Trump. People who don't like him really don't like him.
Absolutely. Gene Card, where can people get more information about you? Website, podcast, anything?
Oh, yeah. I would love for you to check me out at GeneCardInc.com. That's Inc with a K, because I'm a writer.
Okay. GeneCardInc.com. Gene, thank you. It's been fascinating, and we can hopefully hook up again in the future. Thanks, Gene. Be good.
I would love to. Thank you.
Thank you. GeneCardInc.com. Once again, Gene, J-E-A-N, Card, C-A-R-D, Inc, I-N-K, .com. All right. And one of the big stories of the day, pretty much the big national story, doesn't surprise too many people because he was up there and he had alluded to it. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer says that's it. He is done, 82, and now the onus is on the Biden White House to appoint a successor and get it done before the midterm elections, which could change the dynamic in D.C. Here to talk about that is a current professor at the Quinnipiac University School of Law. She's also taught at Gateway Community College, the University of New Haven, the Yale Law School. She was a Connecticut Superior Court judge for 20 years. Before that, an attorney with our friends at Koskoff and Beter in Bridgeport. Judge Angela Robinson joins us. Judge, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So no real surprise here, Judge. You know, we knew that Justice Breyer was up there. I guess the anticipation was the timing here, one. And number two, who some of the successors or the successor might be?
Yes, the timing is a little bit surprising. I think most people felt, and I thought, he would not begin this new term. So it is a bit of a shock that he's decided to do it now, but it makes complete sense.
And I guess, Judge, part of the reason might be, I'm reading here, that maybe he did want to weigh in, maybe, as judges want to do on some issues before he does hang up his robe?
Definitely seems like he wants to be a part of some of the cases that are coming up this term. I mean, I know the affirmative action cases at higher ed are a couple of things he has weighed in on in the past. So that probably had something to do with it.
Let's talk about some of the names, Judge, being thrown around here. Now, the president did make an allusion during his campaign to wanting to kind of break that last ceiling, getting an African-American woman on the high court. Who are some of these names we're likely going to hear about in the next coming weeks?
There's a number of names that have been bandied about for some of the judges on the district court and the appellate court. I don't like to point out any names over others because I think maybe Biden will be reaching into some less traditional places to find some successors.
But no doubt that this would be, just as Thurgood Marshall was the first African-American on the Supreme Court, male, Sandra Day O'Connor, yeah, broke the gender gap. There's a good chance, would you say yes or no, that we may see a groundbreaking announcement here?
I think we will see a groundbreaking announcement. Biden promised that when he campaigned, that he would appoint a black woman to an open seat. And he has an open seat. And he has a number of black women who are qualified.
You know, Judge, so many of these message boards I go on, and you probably see them too, where frankly, a lot of people don't know what they're talking about. That's why I defer to experts like you. But there are a lot of great legal minds in this country, are there not, who, even though you never hear about them, are very well qualified to serve on the high court?
Absolutely. I mean, there are people who are not judges who would make wonderful judges. And at one time in our history, we had Supreme Court justices who did more than just serve on the federal bench. They came from the state courts. They came from executive branch. They came from the Senate. So there's a lot of different places we have found great jurors. I think it's likely that President Biden will continue the tradition of appointing someone who's already on the federal bench, but it's not necessarily so.
Do you ever, final question, Judge, do you ever see us or a president of either party, you know, daring to do that again? Because, of course, Judge, with everybody in their Google University law degrees, there'd be pearl clutching about that all over the country if any president went kind of back, as you say, and appointed other people. Any chance of that ever happening, you think?
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. I know our most recent Supreme Court justice came from a law school that wasn't among those other brethren served. So maybe that will happen.
Retired Judge Angela Robinson, currently teaching at the Quinnipiac University Law School. Judge, thank you so much. We appreciate the time and take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. There you go. Retired Judge Angela Robinson, visiting professor at the Quinnipiac University School of Law. She's also taught at the University of New Haven, Yale Law School, Gateway Community College, and she was also a staff attorney at Koskoff, Koskoff & Beter. And she did bring up something interesting there that I think would kind of be interesting to see or to hear. And that's why you constantly hear about, well, Hillary Clinton on the Supreme Court, Barack Obama on the Supreme Court, or as one of our previous callers said, as Tim mentioned before, well, there's all this buzz about, well, you know, Biden could get rid of, well, he could get rid of Kamala Harris and put her on the Supreme Court. So, you know, you go, now obviously you've got to have a law degree, although I don't know whether that's been per se in the past, but you got to have a law degree, but you could actually pick somebody who is not serving on a federal bench and plug them in there. But like I said, with everybody touting their, you know, their ultra prestigious Google University law degree, I don't see that happening anytime soon. So once again, we thank Judge Angela Robinson, was the Waring and Carmen Partridge Family Fellow at Quinnipiac University, currently teaching there. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Also, and I've been asking this today, too, as part of the festivities here on WICC, the WICC 600 Facebook question of the afternoon. I saw this because you know, you're seeing so much of this in D.C. now with people running for re-election in their upper 70s and 80s. In a world where things are changing so crazy day to day with technology and everything, and wondering whether some of these people really understand what's going on here. Honestly, should there be an age limit in place in running for re-election to Congress? Now, we had a few callers before that said 70, 75 maybe. I kind of agree with that. And I used to be staunchly against term limits, honestly, because I was one of these people who believed, and maybe I'll flop back the other way, you never know, but I was one of these people who believed, well, you know, we do have term limits. They're called elections. But man, oh man, you know, it just, people get lazy. They're worried about getting that federal money, and they don't even give another candidate a shot here. So once again, should there be an age limit in place running for re-election to Congress? If you agree, what should that age be? I mean, what's a fair number of terms for someone to serve in D.C.? Should it be, or even in the state, you know, even in the state house and state senate, we have the same problem here in Connecticut. You have entrenched leadership in the majority party that hasn't changed in years, in a couple of decades. You've got people there. Now, you know, when in defense of these people, you say, well, you know, I was freely and fairly elected. I get that. But man, after a while, can you have just some different voices there? And I look at it this way. How many great voices never get a shot? Think about it. On either side of the aisle, in D.C., in your local city or town, in Hartford, how many voices who, surprisingly or not, may have really good ideas at doing something, but again, they're told don't run, you can't run, you'll never get on the ballot. I mean, it to me, it's just, we don't tap in to the well, I think, of anticipated experience we could have.